Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Legacy Breakfast. I'm Stuart Pullin. With me is Stuart Taylor.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got another guest with us this week.
Ooh.
James Griffin. Hello.
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 Nice round of applause.
Yes.
So this is so weird. I get to hear you guys doing this live. It's like a live action podcast.
Yep.
It's amazing. And I...
Yes.
I can sort of listen to you, but then you're right here.
Yes.
And I can join in. And so if I've got a question, I can ask it.
Interactivity to the max. Now, I know you listened to us in the car, you said.
Yes.
So if you were to give some advice to yourself in the car while listening to this podcast, what would it be?
Concentrate on the road. Become a better driver.
Don't wave.
Look at that truck. Yes.
Hi, James. You're going to hate the sound of your voice.
That's what James. Everybody says. Yep.
No, but it's true. Everybody does hate the sound of their voice. Like everybody does.
Okay, so we've got James on to talk about some stuff that he's interested in terms of legacy. Principally, pimping. And also just having a bit of a general discussion about the format and what he gets up to and stuff.
Yeah, and to the end, how did you get into Magic? Why did you start playing Legacy? What's your favourite thing to do in Legacy? Go.
My very first experience of Magic was sitting in a green room and my high school play, waiting for to go on and do my thing. Badly, it must be said. I was not made for stage. And there were a couple of lads that were talking about this card game that they'd just found in 1994. And I thought it sounded like quite a nice thing, but I couldn't paint it like I could paint my Warhammer figures. So I wasn't interested. Which is a shame, because that would have been a good time.
With hindsight.
Then I tried to play a game in a pub as a student and hated it, but that's because it was whichever set had the morph mechanic in. This is apparently the hand signal for morph.
Onslaught. If you can't see what James is doing, he's holding his hand out laterally at an angle about 90 degrees and then rotating it through 180 degrees.
To reveal
the other.
To reveal a scornful egotist. The best of all morph cards.
You've obviously revealed that you listen to the show, so you'll know that I do the hand signals that are not good for radio. It's fine. So, no problem.
And I hated it, frankly.
Yes.
And I had better things to do with my life. Or so I thought, if I'd have known how cool it was. But there we go.
I don't think that era was particularly good for Magic. Like,
sure,
they just were trying to recover from Time Spiral, and they took all the fun out with Mercadian Masks and gone from there. So,
but had I started then,
yes,
I might now be the proud owner of a pack foil Polluted Delta, which is proving more difficult to find than I can possibly describe.
Why would you be interested in acquiring such a thing, James?
Because it is part of my cube, and I want it to be foil, please, if that's okay.
Now, we were going to do this show basically on kind of what I'd describe more softer skills of Magic. So not what's the most efficient attack with a guy or what's whatever.
Which is good because you've got me on. And it turns out I'm not very good at Magic.
Stu, we need somebody who's terrible at Magic. Who can we get in to talk about
but
things that aren't attacking?
We've got one of those, Stu.
Sorry. Shouldn't run yourself down.
Oh.
And one section of that is like going to be kind of trading and altered and pimping things. And you're quite a good guy to talk about that. And I'll start by saying I have a fundamental lack of understanding as to why people pimp their decks. Like, it seems very prevalent, like, in the EDH community, in the vintage community. People have to have all foils or they're not playing. They have to be Korean altered Goblin Matrons foil from some odd set. Like, what's the pull of that kind of thing?
So I'm the anti-Stew with this.
Yeah.
You and I have a background where you are the only person that I regularly see that I've never traded a card with. It's extraordinary. We've never managed it.
Yeah, we nearly did once, I think.
Well, we nearly did a bunch of times.
I don't think I've ever traded.
Didn't.
Well, I have this theory that, like, I've got all my legacy staples together, most of my legacy staples, but in getting them together, I've basically traded away all my non-legacy staple cards. And so I'm at the point where, like, I have to trade away my cards. Like, why would I give my cards away for some reason? Like, that's the obstacle I can't quite get past.
Yes, I do understand that, and I'm not knocking the fact that you've built this collection, which you can build a bunch of decks which do the tactical things that you want them to do. And I'm going to struggle to explain why I would want to drop 250 quid on a foil polluted Delta, where I could drop 250 quid on a legacy deck.
Mono green elves. Cheerios.
Yeah. How much fun would that be?
That's an episode for another day, I think.
Cheerios deck tech.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, okay, let's try this live. Here we go.
Oh, gosh.
Yesterday, I went to an F&M and traded for 6 True Name Nemeses.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
So,
can I? Yeah.
No, I've got dibs on those. I've got dibs on those.
True Name Nemeses.
Yeah.
Would you trade on air for 2 to 3 True Name Nemeses?
Yes.
Excellent.
I believe I have a Grim Tutor that you want.
You do?
First trade live on air from Stu.
I'll make that trade.
We shall close this out.
Yeah. we'll work out the nuts and bolts. And
yes.
Which is his way of saying he's going to step out of it at the last minute because he really likes his Grim Tutor, even though it smells of sick.
No, but I've got 2. You can have the one that smells of sick, maybe.
If you want.
Because at some point I played an Ant deck with 2 Grim Tutors in, which even I now come to conclude as quite extravagant. And also possibly bad.
I think it's just not very good, but that sounds a lot like actual legacy tactics.
Yes. But right, I think that's a nice intro from James.
Mm.
We're going to sort of do a record scratch moment. So, Stu, if you could find a record scratch sample to edit into this section.
Oh, I can do one with my zip.
Okay, so while you're doing that, what we're going to talk about is it's actually... Oh, record scratch time. Right. That was a lot less impressive. Okay,
so
anyway.
I'll beef it up.
It's fine. Right.
Double it up.
It is actually, today, the 1st of February? Was it the 2nd?
It's the 1st.
1st of February today. So, and it's actually the Born of the Gods pre-release today, which we are all not playing in.
Yes.
And are therefore eminently qualified to talk about.
Yes. So, what we are going to talk about is I've pulled up about 6 or 7 cards from the spoiler, which I don't think you guys probably have seen too much. So you might... Am I going to just go through first impressions? We went through Theros in depth, didn't we, with a few cards, and it turned into the episode of us trashing Theros. So
which on reflection was a little bit unfair. I think there were a couple of cards that actually came out that were better than we anticipated.
Yeah, right, and I've seen play, Swan Song seen play. But anyway, we're going to just go through these and let's just get some impressions on what you think. Probably not going to be staples because sets don't tend to have lots of those in, but let's just see. Anyway, okay, so first one, Unravel the Aether, which is 1 and a green for an instant. Choose target artifact or enchantment. Its owner shuffles it into his or her library. Thoughts?
Interesting.
Okay, so...
I'm actually slightly cross that I haven't noticed this spoiling yet, because I did go through them just going, does this go in cube, does this go in cube, in my mind.
That sounds like a cube.
And actually, this isn't the worst in the world, tucking an artifact or enchantment.
But I mean,
this is legacy.
The thing is, I guess that was printed to deal with indestructible legendary enchantment creatures that tend to be cropping up in standard.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything in legacy you particularly want to...
Batterskull.
Shuffle in. No, you just want to blow that up, surely. Right.
Well, either.
I mean, I guess people... It plays around Academy Ruins a little bit,
that's the question, isn't it? Is what's the value of the tuck
shuffle rather than
over
destroy? Yeah.
Or the card with the thing that stops you countering back. Split seconds.
Yeah, Crows and Grow.
Yeah.
I think
that's the fundamental question. Is there ever a reason why would you want to shuffle something rather than blow it up?
I mean, it stops recursion, which I guess is good. It's kind of bad in that they can make another Stoneforge and find it again.
It makes it quite funny, to do to Omniscient.
I imagine the other answers...
They're probably going to counter it.
The other answers to...
Wouldn't you want Crows and Grip at that moment?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And also, that seems a whole lot worse than having a Batterskull or a Jeet in the graveyard.
I think the other answers to artifacts and enchantments are just so efficient that even just being 2 mana is pretty bad. I guess if you're playing a green-white deck, you might play it instead of disenchant. If you're playing disenchant. Tends not to see so much legacy play, outside of Dredge.
Sure.
I don't know. I suspect it won't see play, but it might do.
It might, like... I don't know, there might be a scenario where this has happened. We can't, I'm like I said, yeah. I'm springing it on you guys. Hmm. You haven't had a chance to think about it, but there might
be. I think Grip's better for one more mana,
yeah. And
there's better alternatives.
If you really want to hate out... if you really want to hate out Enchantress, how do you go about it? Let's say you're playing any other deck in the format.
Harmonic Convergence and Presence of the Master.
Okay.
Have you read Presence of the Master?
No, I don't know what that does.
I think it's like a 3-mana enchantment. If somebody were to play a enchantment, counter that spell.
That sounds like a relatively hard lock.
No, the worst is Harmonic Convergence, though. Like I literally wet... No, I didn't really wet myself.
Literally wet yourself.
I almost literally wet myself when somebody played it on me from Elves. Put all enchantments and artifacts on top of their owner's library, and they get to choose the order because they're the active player when they resolve it. Like, so it's a sorcerer.
You can draw all your 6-drops.
Yeah, so great. Like,
all
that's
your
that's,
wild growth.
That's, yeah, that's really bottom, just, yeah, you're dead. Yeah. Like, really.
Okay, so that's an interesting, like, not necessarily. You've probably seen this one, guys. Kiora the Crashing Wave. So,
oh, she's so pretty.
we're gonna have to focus James from... This is exactly the thing. Like, it's like, I could put it in my EDH cube alter it, and then...
But I've got a green-blue EDH deck, and I was thinking about this one.
Just anyway, for the record, I don't have an EDH cube. I'm not that bad a human being.
Okay, so two green and a blue. Planeswalker, Kiora. 2 loyalty. +1, until your next turn, prevent all damage that would be dealt to and dealt by a target permanent and opponent controls. -1, draw a card. You may play an additional land this turn. -5, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, put a 9/9 blue Kraken creature token onto the battlefield.
A couple of things. Its main competition is going to be Jace the Mind Sculptor at its immediate casting cost.
Yes.
Who is blue and not blue-green.
He's better than all.
Well, indeed.
Yeah. And has 4 much more relevant. I know, I'm being quite harsh.
I don't think it's very good. I really don't think it's very good.
I really want it to be good. Like, that's the kind of card I would enjoy playing, but I don't think it would be good.
On the surface, ignoring the Jace issue, which I grant you is a pretty big issue, she does the things you want her to do insofar as she protects herself and advances your game state with her 2 main abilities, right?
Yeah.
And the final ability... Actually, the final ability doesn't really end the game. It makes a vanilla creature.
Yeah. That you can repeal or abrupt decay.
And whilst we all like a Tarmogoyf,
I think that's
this late in the game?
I think, to be honest, the abilities are kind of irrelevant anyway. So you've tapped out for 4 mana and you've +1'd it, and you've got to try and protect something on the board. Are they not likely to have more than one threat turn 4?
I imagine if they're playing aggro, it's basically irrelevant. Like, yeah. At least... I mean, yeah, protect itself, sure, kill you. Yeah.
But it's Maze of Ith, right?
And the minus...
4 mana that takes a spell slot.
The -1, you're ramping, but you've already got 4 mana, so what are you ramping?
I'm gonna stick my neck out and say something completely ridiculous. Like, yes. If anybody in the world is still playing, like, Cab Jace, I don't know if you've seen that deck, the old Karsten and Cotter deck.
Yeah.
Maybe it goes as a 1-of in there. Make 2 Maze of Ith. Block your things. It seems very bad.
Seems poor.
I can't see it seeing a lot.
I can't think of a deck it goes in.
Okay, can we splash blue for a 4th colour out of Gem Depths? We like exploration in there. Okay, never mind.
I really like what my friend Gaz would describe as fruity tech, and he, like, my even my face then was like, yeah.
Okay, moving swiftly. Painseer, 1 and a black, creature human wizard, 2/2. Inspired, when Painseer becomes untapped, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to that card's converted mana cost.
I'm not inspired.
You're not in.
He might be, I am certainly not.
See what he did
James,
there.
You're fitting so right into it. Good pun.
Yeah, you could be like a sub-editor for puns or something. You could, you know,
okay.
Pun division of Legacy Breakfast.
So it's a bob sometimes that's got to attack. It's tapped.
My instinct is to say that's terrible.
It's not a bob.
But
it's not a bob.
But the thing is, like, you're playing a black deck, so that probably means you have some number of removal in your deck. So it actually might well get in and be able to untap, because that's the criticism. Like, and like, bob just works, whereas he needs to attack basically and then untap to work.
Yeah.
So you're waiting a whole like turn or two turns in order to make this work. That's assuming he can attack and not.
No,
die.
But Bobbert takes a couple of turns to work. Like if you make him, and then he can't attack, he's got some of the sickness. Untap, draw, assume it survives because we live in Christmas land where these cards survive.
They never survive.
Abrupt Decay your Delver in for two. Your go. Like I suspect he'll become like a budget Bob. Like people who can't splash out for Bobs. I think it's not the worst replacement for it.
Then wouldn't you want that other two drop from a recent set?
Draws two cards. There's one from Amazon Restored that replaces the first draw of a turn with two cards instead, I think.
But that's only if you've got no cards in hand.
Yeah.
Even so, I wonder whether that's just flat out better. I mean, this guy
is the point of toughness worth anything at all? Like
play around electricery.
Well, no, there's a lot of things that are giving -1/-1 at the moment because of Trino Nemesis.
That's so interesting.
That's true.
Like the point of toughness is like that's in its favour, but I still don't like it, and it's not going to kill you the same way that Bob could, but. I'm still not a fan, I've got to be honest.
I mean, the best thing I can think to do with this is cipher Hidden Strings onto it, and I'm not sure that's legacy relevant.
No, but you're going to... Right, moving on. This might actually see some play. Drown in Sorrow. So, 1 black for a sorcery. All creatures get -2/-2 till end of turn. Scry one. And I'm not going to say that this is strictly better than any...
I'm going to infest. Say strictly infest. Better than Infest.
it is actually, isn't it? Like,
what if you can't
Infest
scry
with Scry too?
What if you scry the wrong thing to the bottom?
No, but that's your fault. That's not the card being strictly better or worse.
It gives you a chance to leverage your play skill.
It does.
Which for a lot of people is a relevant consideration when they're deciding whether or not to build a deck, particularly a non-blue one.
Mm. I guess the question, because nobody really plays Infest. Like the only place I've ever seen it actually is on
Tess's sideboard.
So I'm just wondering if it's better than Toxic Deluge.
No way.
Nice.
Not even close. This thing doesn't kill an Emrakul for a start.
But I think my thoughts were that you wouldn't. Why would you? You would obviously play this over Infest. But you're right, Toxic Deluge you'd probably
Be the comparison. Yeah. Like I think actually I think the main reason why Toxic Deluge would be better, interestingly, is just the single black.
Mm.
Like Esper's not really going to be able to make that, I think, when it's needed.
And it's not irrelevant that this court kills Goyf. I mean, it hurts, but if they've got...
That's pretty hideous. I've been there where I've had to Toxic Deluge some Goyfs and it feels horrible.
Nevertheless, if they've
take
got
four,
couple, it's still
take
a 2-5.
Yeah.
As opposed to this, which does stone cold nothing. That's not true. It scries two. It's a pretty expensive half
one.
A preordain. Oh, scry one.
Scry one.
Pretty expensive third of a preordain.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's almost like you're getting actual value in the sense like that card should cost 1 2 black and 1 blue. If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So it is actually a good card. I suspect it won't see play.
No.
Over Deluge, which is pretty niche anyway, to be honest, at the minute.
Okay. Bile Blight.
Ooh.
1 black for an instant. Target creature and all other creatures with the same name as that creature get -3/-3 until end of turn.
Mono black mini pulse.
Hit.
For creatures.
Screw you, goblins.
It's not played in Pox. It's not good enough.
Good against Lingering Souls, which is a problem for Pox.
Oh, because permanents are a problem for Pox.
Well, no,
they've
like...
got to 3 mana. You're terrible at playing Pox.
Sure.
Are you on Warrens is another legitimate thing that this poses, but it's 2 mana.
I think the thing is as well, like you. I mean, you wouldn't bring that in against Empty the Warrens, I suspect. And or, like it, the only thing I can think of is it's mono black. So like in my head, the best Pox deck is black green, so like you'd play Pulse or you'd play Deed over it. But actually, just if you wanted to build a mono black Pox with a kind of mini Wrath effect, then it's good.
You
enough.
Play Toxic Deluge,
hmm.
Pay 1 life, kill all their goblin tokens, because you're playing Dark Ritual in that deck.
This is an instant though. That's an
instant.
Oh, okay.
So that's might be relevant. I don't know.
For times they play Bushwhacker as well.
But
Lingering Souls Bushwhacker kill
you? Tap Liliana.
Or it does target, doesn't it? So you can't use it as a true name Nemesis?
No.
Blatter.
You can if you've got your own true name Nemesis.
That's pretty tech. I like that.
Yeah, it's not.
Or if they've named themselves to play around Earthquake.
To play around winning the game. I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those two mana black removal cards that's even more narrow, possibly, but not. When I was building bug control, I went out and got like one smother, one innocent blood, one diabolic edict, one go for the throat. This I could see being part of that sort of removal suite, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I really like if you've got a really cantrip heavy deck, then I like mixing the sweets up of removal and counters. But actually, I think that if you're playing bug, I think you do just play pulse.
Yeah, and the double black's pretty hideous as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, you've got more than one. You'll have one creature on the board that you want to kill, right? So legitimately, whilst its ceiling might be killing multiple creatures, it's probably only going to kill one. In that case, do we compare it to a one black mana target creature gets -2/-2?
Yeah.
And how much better is the extra black mana for the extra -1/-1?
I think three toughness, like, there's not a massive amount of difference between two and three in Legacy. What's... I can't think. I'm struggling to think of things that die to two that don't.
I remember playing Disfigure.
Yeah.
In bug and being pretty pleased with it, rather than Ghastly Demise.
Hmm. Well, and you can name the things that something that gives -2/-2 kills till the cows come home that you want to kill on turn one or turn two. I think
yeah,
that guides,
like Deathrite Chainman suddenly made a Liliana rather than just dying like it should.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But it's good chat, guys. Good chat. Okay, two more cards. Brimaz, King of Orescos. Or Oreos, as people are saying. King of Oreos. One white for a 3/4 legendary creature cat soldier with lots of text. So, Vigilance. Whenever Brimaz, King of Oreos, attacks, put a +1/+1 white cat soldier creature token with Vigilance onto the battlefield attacking. Whenever Brimaz blocks a creature, put a 1/1 white cat soldier creature token with Vigilance onto the battlefield, blocking that creature. Have you guys seen this one?
Have they divided that into chapters? God.
Yeah.
I think I did see this actually, okay. And I think the main thing they actually didn't say is it's 3/4.
Yeah. So I did say it's 3/4.
Oh, you did see 3/4.
3/4 for three mana. Vigilance.
I think actually that's pretty.
Yeah.
Boss. I can't see it being played, to be honest.
So like, my first thought is comparing it to two cards that don't really see play and might be better.
That's interesting, because I was thinking of two cards. What two cards were you thinking of?
Ooh. I was thinking of a card as well.
Ooh.
I'm going to go first. I thought of Silverblade Paladin and Hero Bladehold.
Okay.
As my first thought in something to compare this to. And Hero Bladehold, as nice as and as good as I think that card is, it doesn't really see much play. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're more of an aficionado of niche decks than I am. However, I don't think Silverblade Paladin has ever seen Legacy play anywhere in the world in any competition ever.
Well, speaking with authority, I can tell you that you're correct. No, I'd say no.
Interestingly, my two cards were... Mirren Crusader, which does see play, and I think Knight of the Reliquary as well. Like, a lot of white decks play green, and like knights land at like 9/9 sometimes. It's like
always
really...
annoying. Yeah.
Hero Bladeholds I've seen in Stax decks sometimes.
Yeah, there is a Stax variant that's plays like three batter skulls.
Yes.
And like, which is hilarious because you make a turn one Stoneforge, which for start is 1000% better than turn two Stoneforge. And then you get a batter skull. Then you block the batter skull. And then you just naturally draw another one, just put another one in. And everybody goes like, what? Nobody plays two batter skull. That's crazy.
Stacks those.
The Star City coverage last week was absolutely brilliant for this. They had a Stax. I think it was Stax on Jund Depths matchup.
Yeah.
How to alienate your
these poor commentators clearly had never had to talk about or think about stacks before.
Oh man. I don't know. Like, the commentators tend to not be very good on those things, I think.
Whoa.
Well, no, I mean, to be honest, I don't really like watch a lot of these things, but
they've got a lot better. They've culled a few of the ones that,
that's
that
good.
Went up to scratch from listener feedback, and they've got some people who know what they're talking about. Like, not necessarily legacy specialists, but people who know what they're talking about. I'm going to drag the conversation back, though.
Sorry.
That's okay. So I think, like, Mirror and Crusader is just good because it smacks you in the face very, very hard.
It's also got extremely relevant protection.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, but this is, like, pretty large, pretty beefy, and starts building an army.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a, well, I was about to say, I guess it's a good standalone threat. Mm. But actually, I think Mirror and Crusader is as well.
Yeah.
And, like, Mirror and Crusader makes a lot of draws very live. You know, if you draw a Jitte, then the game's suddenly just over.
Yeah.
Whereas it might not be in this case. I like him. It's possible he finds a home somewhere, but I can't quite see it.
Mm. I would definitely prefer Mirror and Crusader out of Death and Taxes.
Yeah. Okay. And finally...
Yay! The good card!
No, the sky is falling! What's happening?
I haven't even read it out yet! Okay. Spirit of the Labyrinth. One and a white. Enchantment creature, spirit. Each player can't draw more than one card each turn, and it's a 3-1.
I think that's the best... Again, I think that's the actual best bit of the card, is the 3-1. Yep. Like, it's quite easy to write it off as another hate bear. Like, so, I mean, what density of 2-mana hate bears do you really want in your deck? Like,
the correct answer is all of them.
The correct answer is many. I don't know. Like, a lot of people are very like, whoa! I think it's just another guy. Like, yes, it kind of hoses Storm. Yes, Storm's used to being hosed by hate bears, so it has answers.
Doesn't stop ad nauseum.
Yeah, it doesn't stop ad nauseum. Doesn't stop Bob.
No.
But, like, it cuts off cantrips. Like, it makes... assembling combos harder. But it's a guy. Like,
it's a guy that's got another...
it's a guy that can even disenchant.
Enchantment, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a guy with protection from your opponent's deck if they're playing something that relies on cantrips to find an answer to a threat.
I mean, I guess that's the one advantage it does have over other hay bears, is it would be harder to find an answer to it. Like, under
the main strength.
Yeah, under, like, a canonist, you can... end of turn, brainstorm in their turn, then find something, then play it, and then go off.
I think everybody's seen the potential for Vilesin in response to a brainstorm. And is dining out on that fact, as James appears to be right now. yes, so obviously that's probably the best, like, what's the best case? Like, Violet in response to Sphinx's revelation or something? Like,
but I think, is it going to be more efficient than Thalia at doing that, though? Like, I mean, the vile trick doesn't work, but in terms of just making a guy, turn one, make a land drop, turn two, make a port Thalia, I think that's stronger than make a port that guy. Like Thalia feeds into the plan of Death and Taxes already, whereas that guy doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to look at is probably what is this competing with Death and Taxes?
Like, all of the cards.
Not necessarily, no, because there's only a couple of twos.
I think this could legitimately compete as well with a couple of the threes too.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible you might want to lower the curve and make Vile better, but... the three drops in that deck are bonkers.
Twos are things like Revoker, Thalia, Stoneforge. So I guess you are playing 12 already.
I actually think that all those cards are probably better than that one.
Okay.
There, I said it.
Mm. Mirror and Crusader's gone in and out of lists that have done well over the last few months. Mm. I wonder whether this could legitimately replace that in either in some metas or in a more general sense to some degree. Let me ask you this question. If this is less good than Thalia... if you had the choice, would you play 5-6 Thalia as opposed to 4?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Or maybe like a 3-2 split. I like a 3-2 split, I don't know why.
Is Legendary, like, something to consider in that?
Point.
Not really. If you've got a Thalia on the board, you're probably winning. And if you don't, you can make another one. I hate that when you're playing Storm. And, like, you know that you can, like, either take a whole turn to block the Thalia... or...
but they've got a Vile then, too.
And then they just, more Thalia. So, like, that's really horrible.
Yeah.
So I don't... I mean, you could argue that 4 Thalias may be 1 too many. So, like, a 3-2 split is good, but... I don't know, more... like, you want to make a Thalia on turn 2, basically.
I'm, like... when I saw this, I was like, okay, I need to pre-order this card. But it's $8 as well. Like, that's
really
a lot of money.
Luckily, it's no good in standard, so it's relatively cheap.
Yeah, well, I think $8 is revelation.
I think $8 is cheap for this card.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do.
You heard it here first, chaps. And chapettes. Go and get your copies now. Okay. Well, that's all the cards I had. Unless anybody had any others that they've seen.
I've literally not. The only one I've seen is that Spirit of the Labyrinth. Just because everybody's like, this invalidates all strategies.
Okay. Well,
this boltable man.
In that case, let's start talking about pimping.
Pimp, pimp, pimp.
Jamie knows about the pimp.
And having the pimp master himself.
What is pimp?
I'm fascinated that even that we use this term, it's something which I know, I presume this is an American term initially, where it was previously, well, we know what it was previously. But now, in terms of magic, we mean playing with pretty cards.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Magic, for me, since I've done a bunch of real-life things, like having a job and getting married and having a child and that sort of thing, has become something which takes up precious time. And if I'm going to put that time into playing magic, I want it to be an event, and I want it to be something that I'm really looking forward to, and I very much enjoy the act of doing.
Yeah.
I don't fully get that from simply playing in tournaments, because I'm a terrible magic player. So I don't win very much, which is fine. I'm okay with this. I've come to terms with this fact. But I genuinely love pulling up my opening hand, seeing a bunch of very nice-looking cards. And I can't explain to you, Stu, why that is something that I really like more than that. All I can do is say that that itself gives me a kick, and the best thing about playing Magic is your opponent, right? I love talking to my opponent, getting to know them.
Yeah.
I enjoy that aspect of it. That's why I can't bring myself to really get into playing online, because I don't have that interaction. I like going there and meeting people and seeing people that I know and like you guys, and playing Magic with you. And when those cards spark a conversation, when we can discuss it, I like that it brings a little bit of extra happiness and discussion to the game. That doesn't wholly explain why I would spend 10 to 20 times more on a card than I otherwise would have to. Granted, there is an element of lunacy inevitably involved, particularly at the high end.
Like, I can kind of empathise. Like, I tend to just go for bulk of cards. Like, in my mind, if I can get a battered, you know, card for the... Like, one of my Tundras is practically destroyed, and I got it at a very reasonable rate, shall we say.
One of your Swords to Plowshares makes me want to cry. I think there's actually oil on the surface of the card.
There probably is. Like there's like, a class of card I own from my, like, original Magic days, and, like, the amount of powers worth of guys that Swords to Plowshare has plowed. You see, I think that gives me the same joy. Like, yes. Just knowing that I played with this card when I was, you know, 20 or whatever, and I remember when he made this thing, and then I did that thing with this card, like this actual specific card, and then that killed the guy.
I appreciate that. I do have a couple of cards at home which I won't be trading away, just because of the great memories from when I first started playing in World Wake, eventually, when I actually got into the game. Which I'm just never going to get rid of. They're fabulous. Yeah, so I appreciate that.
I nearly cried when I had to get rid of my Primeval Titans from Standard.
Oh, that was a sad time.
Yeah, I named them all. I get really sentimental. I named all my Primeval Titans.
One of the most fun things about that Standard format, because I was actually playing Standard then, was playing... just grinding the Valakut mirror against you.
It's the most horrific matchup. That's the most horrific matchup.
Everybody must be a bit on edge. Like, am I dead? Am I going to die? What's going to happen next time? I have no way of interacting with this. I was going to say that you've kind of, like, just an observation from I've been playing with Stu. You've started getting more into having pimp cards, because now, like, all of your basic lands are Guru or you.
No, sadly not Guru.
Hold up. There's a whole hierarchy of basic lands going
but
on.
But, like, genuinely, this is the actual reason why I did this, is because, as we all know, basic lands beat Legacy.
Yep.
Like, just if you make basics, then you win the game, pretty much. That's how it works, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure.
And
you
so
need, like, stymie a few decks plans.
Yeah, that basic island just destroyed so many people at the bomb, like, really.
It's one of the biggest things I hear from people about pimping in general. Why do you spend actual money on your basic land? It's basic land. There's a land station over there. I'm sure they'll let you have some for free. Why is it that you need to do that? But they go in everything. You get to keep them. They become your friends. And you get to put them in every deck you ever build.
But as well, basically, because obviously, when you first get jewels, for example, you get really excited by jewels. You want to fetch your jewels under all situations, regardless of tactical sense.
Absolutely.
Whereas I needed something to make me fetch basics. Because fetching basics is really good. So I just bought some nice Eurolands and, like, I'd love to have, like, one Guru Island. Like, for those decks that play one island. Like,
you would never amazing. Bring yourself to buy a Guru Island, I can feel it.
I know,
you
I don't
could get a Tabernacle for the same price.
Wow. I've already got a Tabernacle.
Okay.
Although, then I could make an intuition pile of Life from Loam, Tabernacle, which would make me quite happy.
Well,
rather than Tabernacle, Life from Loam.
I'm going to listen back to this later and get cross. You could probably get a beat-up Italian Tabernacle for the same price as a Guru Island.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the other thing I've noticed as well is I have started... Basically, I think the artwork is really important in Magic in the sense that
it's the way at the beginning, isn't it?
Between it's the way you experience the worlds that they've created, if that makes sense. And, like, I've always loved the Rebecca Guay art, and I like a few artists. And so, like, when it came to my Storm deck, my first thought was all Rebecca Guay Dark Rituals, and then it was like, well, I want to mix it up, so I, like, had one of each different type of artwork for Dark Rituals. And then my Dark Ritual started being pimped. Just at some point, almost subconsciously replacing them all with really nice ones.
What Dark Rituals have you got, Shu?
I think my worst pimp one is the From the Vault Dark Ritual. Okay. Because I like that artwork. It's quite a nice artwork, but I don't really like the foiling on the From the Vault.
I hate that artwork, and the foiling makes me sad.
So that's why it's my worst pimp one. But, like, if you've got three really nice ones, you might as well have a vague stab at the
last
one.
But you've got the Sad Owl. I like the Sad Owl.
The judge foil, which I like to think of as a dying owl.
This is
what happens after the Dark Ritual.
This is what happens when you play Tez after three pints and have 20 quid in your pocket, isn't it?
No, I know exactly what happens when you play Tez after three pints, which is you leave the Empty the Warrens in off the board every single game and get just completely
I will spanked. Buy any number of Dark Rituals at £20 if they're the Sad Owl.
That was the one judge promo right now. I think that's what it was for.
I think I kind of celebrated my 0-4 drop when I made the mistake of having some beers because I wasn't driving before a tournament.
Yes.
Oh, that's the best way to play a tournament.
Not Storm.
I played Doomsday that way.
No, but you need something to numb the pain of playing Doomsday.
That's true. When you've got a 20% win percentage having resolved Doomsday.
When you've got a 20% win percentage in the goldfish, then, yeah, that's true.
What's the number? So that's, like, From the Vault.
I'm just trying to work it out in reverse order. Yeah, I think that Dying Owl is actually the next one up, and that's a really nice one, so... Then the other ones are... I've got an altar Dark Ritual. So is it Sauraman? Sandrine.
I was a present from Bomb.
Yeah. It was like a nice...
Gaz, Nicola and me.
Yeah. And so that's actually really doubly nice for me because, like, sentimental value and it looks really sweet because it's an altar, so...
Can I just say really Sandrine's fantastic. She does some of the coolest altars I'd see around.
They're she also seemed really chilled out as well. Yeah. Like, properly chill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it must be quite a nice day, actually, just like... Meet some people who are enthusiastic about your work and sell a few cards and paint a few cards. Like, it seems like a nice day, like, actually. And then I think my last one is, I think it is beta. We did work out it was beta, not alpha, Dark Ritual.
Yes, it's beta, which stands for beat up.
It's got creases and folds and no edges. And it's amazing.
That's why it looks alpha. You know when your beta card has played a lot of matches when it looks alpha on the corners. Mm. Yeah.
My requirements for my deck are that the basic lands are all the same version. All of the same, the cards are the same edition.
You're one of those tournament players who doesn't like people to get extra information off your play sets.
Not that. I'm not too fussed. Like, because if I wanted to play, I just it just grates when I draw the cards.
Do you like the uniformity of it? Like,
yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, I tend to not like foils as much, but if the version I've got's foil, then I'll pay four of the same versions. Like, I got Cabal Therapies, which are the non-foil version. The foil versions are Cabal Therapies because they're easy to get hold of. So
yeah,
as long as all four are the same, it's just that's what matters to me.
Yeah, and the artwork's pretty sweet too.
Yeah,
so that's cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So what? Let's segue then into altering, shall we?
Yes.
Because that's another extension of this sort of pimping. Yes. It happens to be probably the only thing that I can talk with any sort of authority on.
And why
on
is
this
that,
podcast.
James? Why?
Because I do it.
You
myself.
Do it?
Yes,
yeah,
I do indeed. For the last few years, and this was probably the thing that really cemented my continuing to play Magic, come hell or high water, or marriage or child, was the fact that I could take my enjoyment of painting and sculpting miniatures and turn it into something I can do with magic cards. Ooh. That makes me very happy. So it gives me an opportunity to play with the artwork and to engage with the artwork on a level that I wouldn't otherwise be able to. And now it's become something that I do very much on commission. I can offer that to other people where they can say, I like this artwork, I want to celebrate it, I want to build on it, I want to do something with it, or I want to be able to design my own magic card that I can play out of my deck that is unique.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice feeling.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think I can understand it in terms of EDH as well, when people get excited by... Because you're only allowed one of each thing, so like it's nice to make that one thing a special thing.
Yes, and one of the first things I did for myself was, because I wanted to get good at this, was paint myself an EDH deck.
Which is on Mana League, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is.
The Journey.
This is pretty old now.
Yeah.
It's fair to say. Yeah. I mean, my artwork's got better since then, but sure.
Sure. Well, no, that's obviously going to happen.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. Cool. You've got a website?
I do indeed.
What's your website?
Can I pimp it now?
Of course
that's
you can.
Excellent. www.griffinalters.com. It's got a pile of alters on there. I really should update it, and I definitely will, based on the fact that this is going to be heard by at least two other people, because I'll listen to it in the car and one of you two will listen to it.
Yeah.
Plus, I assume others. So I'll get that updated. Check the website out. It's got a bunch of different alters that I have done in the past. Not all of them by any means, but some of them. I've got plenty of pictures if you want to contact me through that. And on my FAQ at the top, on the right-hand side, you will find a rough price guide. All I'm interested in is how long it takes me to do it. I just want a reasonable return on my free time that I put into painting. So that's... listed there. I'm just trying to forestall a bunch of the questions that I get. How much does an alter cost?
You've got a disclaimer about anime babes as well.
I won't paint them. I will not paint scantily clad or downright naked. Inevitably women. How many times have I ever been asked to paint an anime man on a card? Although, actually, that might be quite a nice social statement to turn up to a tournament, play a bunch of naked men on your basic lands, and just see how uncomfortable
Yummy.
Your opponent is.
See how uncomfortable you get naked.
You could do a really small one really subtly somewhere. That'd be good.
Is there no male nakedness on any actual artwork on magic cards?
There are some barbarians which aren't such a fan of clothing, I think.
True.
I'm actually thinking Reverse Damage, which is a bit random. The artwork's horrible on it.
I don't know.
But I think they've got like loincloths and that. Like any barbarian artwork's probably low on the clothing.
Barbarian hordes? Or are they snowy barbarians?
Yeah, they got furs. They got their fur on.
They're not exactly going for the sex appeal, though, are they?
Being a caveman.
Yeah.
So do you tend to... Is there any correlation at all between, like, Legacy and pimping? Or is any of your commission... Do you tend to find that Legacy players are interested in this, or...?
I think a lot of people that like alters and want to get them done... Not everybody by any means, but a lot of people want to be able to use them in the long term. I don't often have people who contact me to do commissions which they are specifically asking me to do so that they can trade them on. It happens, but it's not something that is relatively often. the case. So people will hold on to them for ages. And I've had some wonderful experiences of going to a GP and sitting down in front of a stranger and playing, and then playing one of my alters and looking at this thing like, this looks vaguely familiar. I don't really sign my cards, so I have to look quite closely to know if it's mine.
That's quite
and
funny.
And it's... that's a great experience.
Yeah.
Brilliant as well to see them in people's trade binders, particularly if it's in the this isn't for trade, I just like to show people section. I love seeing that. It gives me a great kick. It might mean I'm a massive egotist, but I like...
I actually hate that section of people's trade folders. Have you ever opened somebody's trade folder and then they've got this page of amazing things and you go, oh, I'll trade you this for that, and they're like, oh, no.
I tend to ask quite early on in any trade, what is for... trade in here. Is it all for trade or is it not?
Trade etiquette. Like, if it's not for trade, don't put it in your trade folder.
But I want you to see my amazing cards.
That's cool. Like, but then you can have a folder of amazing cards.
No, people do that as well. Like, they go, oh, I've got any trades, and then they get out this folder full of junk, and you go, this is a folder full of junk. And then they go, okay. And then they get out the real trade folder. Like, people do that, I think, as well.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm probably guilty of it to an extent. I have two that I tend to take with me. Yeah. And for instance, I'm sitting down with a fellow who comes up to me and says, I heard you want a thespian stage. It's true, I do. Would you like to trade for it? I have one. Absolutely, no problem. There's no sense in me giving him a 128-page binder full of altars that are going to be worth significantly more than a thespian stage. It's quicker, and that actually matters at a large competition. If the bulk of trades is something you're going for, then if I can hand him a file with things of approximately that value, we're on to a winner.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think there's something about levelling. But yes, it does kind of suck when somebody looks at your file and goes, oh, I'd really like that playset of Jace the Mind Sculptor, those Stoneforge Mystics, and that Tundra. And then hands you a file full of standard junk rares, you know? So yeah, I think there's a levelling thing. In exactly the same way as there is playing Magic, knowing the tactical level of your opponent.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, like I'm getting less impressed with trading. I find it ever more awkward and tedious these days.
I think as well, a lot of people have cottoned on to the value of trading for value, and so like a lot of people, particularly at big events, I think quite aggressively trade for much lower value. Like they treat you as their warehouse for their shop. Which is kind of a big turn-off, I think.
Yes, I think particularly at a large tournament, you have to know what you're getting into when you sit down opposite somebody. Yeah. And actually, I think a lot of people just don't have the guts to say, I'm done here, I don't want to move forward. I'll tell you the biggest thing for me that bugs me is, particularly, and it happens mainly at larger tournaments, is they sit down, they go through your file and say, how much for this? How much for this?
They're looking to trip you up, aren't they? They're looking to try and exploit your lack of knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah. At which point, I'll shut my binder and walk away. Yeah. But some people don't have the guts to do that, and they end up getting ripped off, which is why this keeps working. You're much better off trading for things that you think will go up.
Yeah.
That's a much better way of, if you want to build your collection. So at the minute, I'm trading for all of the primordials. I love them. I think they're great. And I'm getting them at 50p or 25p or something like that.
They're going to be
which is
really
a legitimate
good
value like, at the minute. You can buy them for that, realistically, at the minute. And I'm going to stick them in a box for 2 years. And then when I pull them out, with a bit of luck, they're going to be worth $5 each. It's not
sure
a big thing,
yeah, I'm sure
but that's the hope. You know, that's a much better way of building a portfolio than...
Yeah, I actually tend to do that by complete luck. my famous trades... is I turned 4 Grim Lavamancer from the Fire and Lightning box set and a fetch into 2 Tropical Islands via Bob. Just before Modern was announced, I traded Grim Lavamancers and a fetch for a playset of Bob's.
Seems decent.
And then Modern was announced, and then Bob's like quadrupled in price. And then I traded those 4 Bobs for 2 Underground Seas. 2 Tropical Islands.
Very nice.
So more luck than judgment, but like being aware of what cards are likely to spike, or if you've noticed something like I will spoil it. Like for example, I think Chlawan, Cephalid Empress at the moment is eminently playable. it's only got one blue, and it kind of shuts down True Name Nemesis to really a silly degree. And so I think that's actually like a really good card that might not do anything, but might just suddenly shoot up three times its value. And so it might be worth speculate, for example.
That's an interesting question, actually. Like, how do you acquire your cards, Jim? Because, like,
I tend to not anymore.
Yeah. Well, what I'm doing now is I used to draft a lot. Whatever was the most modern set. I used to play standard. I did a few PTQs, but now I'm not really interested in standard. I'm only interested in playing legacy. So what I tend to do is look through the spoiler and just go, right, that's legacy playable, that's legacy playable, that's legacy playable. I'm just going to get the cards.
Yeah.
I'm going to look to where I can get those cards for the cheapest price.
But I mean that does work, and that's a good plan. But occasionally you'll come across a card like... I actually got my set of Temporal Masteries the other day. I did a trade, and it was 4 Aether Vials. I had a dream of building Counter Slivers.
I'm not liking this that you've traded 4 Aether Vials before tonight.
No. Like it was a part of a larger trade. Like, okay. I just got a load of cards, and there was some Temporal Masteries in it. But when Temporal Mastery came out, it was like a $40 card.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so like that would be bad to just buy, because in my mind it was relatively clear. Again, the sky wasn't going to fall, and then it was going to break Magic. And so wait until they come down to like, what was it, like $3 or something?
Probably. Yeah, I think it's figuring out what it is you want out of the game is quite important when you're trying to figure out how you buy into a format and how you buy into the game as a whole. If you're wanting to get very much into Legacy, there may only be Spirit of the Labyrinth that you want. And actually, to be honest with you, 4 foil Spirit of the Labyrinth right now is going to cost less than drafting that set a couple of times a month for the entirety of the time.
The good thing about drafting, I mean, to be honest, I don't really draft anymore. Like, I mean, in answer to the question like a while ago, I actually tend to get cards by winning tournaments and getting credit. Like,
it's actually becoming more of a thing for me now, which is good.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's not true. I won a From the Vault Realms once. Yeah, that happened. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that one solid
cutting.
Probably
remark.
Because neither of you two were there. But
it was jazz applause.
Thanks. Very good.
That's about the interval for jazz applause.
That reminds me, actually, just talking about this has made me want to look up the prices of Bonfire of the Damned, because I wanted to get some of them.
Yeah, because that's the other thing about Legacy, is because you don't need all of the cards immediately, then it means if you can wait for it to rotate out of Standard, which, you know, your deck's still going to be viable, then you can pick it up then. Yeah. And also, if you draft, then it gives you a lot of trade fodder to trade, because, like, obviously Standard players aren't really interested in Legacy staples necessarily.
They're interested if they're worth lots of money, so they can
trade for Standard. But like, you can sometimes find somebody with a spare moat from the olden days who drafts now, and then you can, do you know what I mean, you can set something up. Yeah. So I think drafting is actually a good way to get a trade collection together.
Mm. But really it comes down to how other people view the same cards, isn't it? And that's when you end up with a decent trading situation, is where two people view the same card differently. So, for instance, sitting down with somebody, I looked through a little binder, and he had a pile of rares that, as far as I could tell, I don't know much about Standard, but I didn't think had any real value. And we've got one True Name Nemesis just stuck in there. I said, "Oh, you've got a True Name Nemesis." With some surprise. I wasn't expecting to turn the penultimate page and see that tucked away at the back. And he said, "Yeah." And you see this look in his eyes.
Right, do you want
he says, "How much is it worth?" And I said...
This is where it's an honesty test now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, well, I looked it up. I forget exactly what it was at the time, but I looked it up. It's fluctuated quite a lot. It's a weird
30
one.
$30 or something.
It depends where you look. I think we were looking about that. And you see this in his eyes. You can see him going, "I bought that deck for less than you want that card for. Are you an idiot?" And in actual fact, no, I think it's going to be worth more than that in a year's time, and therefore I'm willing to paid that sort of amount now. But it's about how you view it differently. So that was a very happy trade. He was thrilled to get rid of it for that sort of value, and I was thrilled to pick it up for that sort of value. Happy days. Everybody wins. That's the nice way of doing it. That's happy when it pans out.
I'm still writing down cards I'm going to look up. I need to look at... I'm thinking about buying a True Name Nemesis before it gets a bit crazy.
Sure.
So, but I do have a wedding to pay for. So,
yeah. Well, there is that too.
Yeah, you need to find a copy of that Richard Garfield card. Like
PhD, Richard Garfield PhD.
No. There's a super duper I think one of in existence.
Now we're talking card. Proper pimp. No, there's several of them.
Yeah,
because they were given to family and friends, I believe, as well.
Oh, okay. It's like target player proposes, and then something.
There was a blog post somewhere on the internet, wasn't it? If you can Google, I'll Google it and I'll try and put it in the show notes about super rare magic cards.
What is, if you could have one magic card from all of magic history?
Ooh.
Given to you,
ooh,
free of charge.
Right.
Which one would you pick?
Ooh.
Ooh.
See, for somebody like me, I spent a lot of time thinking about answers to this question.
This is probably like tells you what sort of person I am. I'd probably go for the most valuable I could get, so that I could convert it into all the magic cards that I wanted.
Okay, caveat: you're not allowed to sell it on. This is for you to keep. And
imagine you're playing Brewster's Millionaires. Have you seen that film? Is it
Brewster's Millionaires?
Yeah, so you can't destroy it. Yep, you've got to play it.
I would. Oh, I'd probably get something like ridiculous that I need to play, and so it'd probably be a piece of power.
Okay.
Maybe an Alpha Lotus or something.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Oh man, me.
Stu.
It's really tough. It's a really hard one.
It's really tough.
I heard there were some like alternative art foil City of Traitors.
There are.
They're worth about 40. Grand or something.
They're worth. I think they're worth somewhere in the region of 4 to 6.
Oh, okay.
And there's.
Maybe that was for the playset. Like,
there's several dozen of them out there.
Hmm.
But
that's like a realistic card that.
Yeah.
I might feasibly come across at some point in my magic career.
I've never seen one.
I've never seen one either.
There's plenty of pictures, because there were. That's the one of the playable ones off that test sheet that they had. But
yeah. See, this is grating now, because if I had one. Well, I'd need four.
No, this would rate you even more because they don't match.
Oh,
because they're all alternative art. That's the point of it.
They're the same art, but they're different colours.
Oh,
so some of them
okay.
are darker, some of them are lighter. There's different colour borders. Some of them got silver borders, some are black bordered. There's different colour bits around the text box. Blue, red, yellow.
I'm actually twitching, listeners.
That's a sweet. I think it's fair to say if I could put something in my cube of that nature, it would be one of the test prints.
You have got some real oddities in your cube, haven't you?
Have I got some oddities?
The black proto planeswalkers or whatever they were.
Oh, the SDCC planeswalkers.
Sweet.
They're pretty, though really difficult to play with in a practical sense because you cannot read the card. Even sitting with it in front of you on the desk, you have to pick it up and read it from about 2 inches away in order to actually make out what's written on the card. Mm. But that's okay because you know what it does, right? They're pretty, but not super rare.
Okay, so let's throw the question back at you. Yep. What's the card then?
One of. Two-ish.
Okay. Well,
cards. The Ship of Fukujin Dragon is one.
Yeah, I've heard.
Which is a card, if you've not come across it before, that is mounted on the wall in an office in China or Japan or somewhere, which was given to them as a present from Wizards of the Coast for doing something I've forgotten. Printing some cards for them or something.
This is on the web.
And there's a one-off. Okay, great stuff. The second one would be, I think, because I would want it in my cube more than any other card, would be a foil textless lightning bolt. I'm clutching myself with pleasure just saying it.
Are they super rare?
Yes, unbelievably so.
Really?
I think Ryan might have one.
You need to understand I'm not talking about the player reward foil lightning bolt.
Yeah.
I've got 5 of those,
yeah.
And one of them's in my cube. It's a foil, it's an old bordered foil card that was a test print that doesn't have any text on it at all,
right,
or the casting cost. It is the border with a blank text box and the old artwork.
Okay.
Ah.
Yes. And it looks innocuous, which is, I think, why I like it.
You might find it in a car boot sale somewhere.
You could pass over it. If you're playing in a game and somebody played it, although I'm not sure it's tournament legal, ask your head judge, boys and girls. It's
Does it have a back?
Good question. Some of the test prints have a white back, others have a magic back. Another question is the thickness right?
Yeah.
And if you play it, will it crease if you bend it? Those are important questions, because some of them are printed on different cardstock. But now we're getting into huge amounts of nerdery.
No. It's cool. I think that was a pretty... like a romp through all this kind of stuff that you're interested in. So I would, on behalf of Legacy Breakfast, I would love to have you back some other time, James. So if you're ever free and want to come back and talk more in depth about any of these things, please thank feel free to come back.
And maybe at some time that's not 9 in the morning. It's so wrong doing a podcast at 9 in the morning.
Having made you wait for half an hour.
It's Saturday chaps as well.
Genuinely apologise. I thought we might be able to do a live action actual Legacy Breakfast on the thing. We could just sit around and eat for an hour and then people could join in.
Lots of munchy noises.
That was an episode suggestion actually from one of our listeners. We
want to do that, don't we? Anyway, because that'd be fun to actually do Legacy Breakfast over breakfast.
I'd love to be there.
Podcast to 5,000, which is my iPhone, and take it down to Poppins. I think
it's really interesting that we have been getting quite some feedback as well. So I think I'd like to thank everybody who's fed back.
Yes.
Some lovely emails, some really encouraging emails.
One from Adrian from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah, Worcester, Massachusetts. I thought that was quite funny.
Thank you very
much. Imagine there's somebody in Worcester, Massachusetts, like listening now. Well, not now, but now.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really nice having some feedback, and we love it, so please listen to
I'm quite slow at feeding back to feedback, if that makes sense.
We're going
to
reply. We are going to reply.
Sweet.
When I get a sec. Contact details then. So you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/legacybreakfast. The website is legacybreakfast.wordpress.com. You can look for us on iTunes by searching for Legacy Breakfast. What else? Like I said last week, Twitter's going to happen at some point. The email, send us an email, legacybreakfast@gmail.com. Or come along to a Man League tournament that's something to do with Legacy, and probably one of us will be there.
You've actually got to that point where you can read that off your eyelids now.
Yeah.
And have breakfast with us.
Nom, nom, nom.
Cool, so until next time then, guys. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you, James.
Yeah.